Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Hi, I'm Jerry Goodspeed. I'm here at the Utah State University Extension Education Building at the Ogden Botanical Garden. And today I'm here to talk about a problem that we're seeing, an invasive species that is moving into our area and becoming more and more of a problem to homeowners and to landscapes. And that problem is the garden gnome. Now, the gnome, we believe, was introduced into our area from England. They're very attractive at first, a little bit of a cheery smile, if you will, but over time, they become very invasive into the garden. You'll find them creeping up, or showing up in the herb garden, next thing in the vegetable garden, and pretty soon in the annuals and the perennials. And once established, they're very difficult to control. Here in the garden, in mid-February, and in Ogden, we're about a zone 5, a zone 4, and you can already see their cheery little red hats starting to poke through the ground. Now, this is very typical of our area. They're first, usually about the end of January, 1st of February, you will start to see this red cone just after they've germinated. Now, they're very hardy, and this is why we see them germinating so early in the spring or late winter.
From the little brick building on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM and FM, Chicago.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company, because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. He's the guy who puts the ick in organic. Here he is, Mike Novak.
You ready there, Helen? Let's do this. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Oh, I missed it.
One more time.
3, 2. Oh, wait, it stopped. It went. We had premature one more time.
Okay. How embarrassing.
Really? Now I got to clean up.
Oh, no.
Oh, what a mess. I'm looking at these phones here. I just want to make sure that they're okay. Just noticed that
I did a check.
Denny, you did a check? Okay, because they got new things. They got new numbers on them. It doesn't look the same as it did 2 weeks ago when they worked. Those numbers are cool. They're supposed to be there, Denny.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Great. Wow. Oh. Daddy, hey, yo, dude, the box isn't here. I need my dinger. I need my frog.
Okay.
All right, thanks, man.
Oh, no.
I forgot my dinger and my frog. Lordy. And we had premature one more time. Oh, geez, what are you going to do? That's not a good way. And the cord, the headset cord is wrapped all the way around this chair. Hold on. I don't want to strangle myself. On the air.
Yeah,
do you think Norman Goldman has these kinds of problems? I bet Tom Hartman never does. Doesn't strangle himself with the headset cord. Oh, there we go. Look, ask and ye shall receive. And look what we have here. There we go. Oh, wait. And there we are. Anything else we got? Wait. Do we have the fire? I think we've got it in here, too. No, I might have tossed it.
I don't know.
I had my cellophane so we could do the fake fire. thing. But I think I think I tossed
Maybe
it.
I'll bring a pair of coconuts next week. Certainly it's tropical enough
clip,
for
clop,
it.
Clip, clop, clip, clop, clip, clop. I like that. Yeah, bring the coconuts. Is that code? All right. Good morning, everybody. Wow. Hey, there's a phone call pouring in, too. You want to grab that? I'm not sure why at this hour. But happy to be here. Happy to be anywhere today. It snowed around here last night. For those of you listening in other climes, but not much. It's not that bad. A little dusting out here. In fact, more here, just a few miles from my home, more here at the studio than at my home in my backyard. My yard, practically nothing at all, because I'm smack dab in the middle of the city. But here, a little bit. As you know, winter arrived this week. Unannounced. Well, no, it was announced. We told you it was going to happen. Rick DeMaio did, and he'll be here later to talk about that. Got a really cool email from Pat Skatch just the other day, and we'll talk about that, too, when Mr. DeMaio's on the show, and it's about how climate change is going to mean more lightning. Yikes. If I can find that, I hope I can find that email.
So that's actually kind of related to this call that just came in. It was Ron from Mighty House.
Yeah.
And he wants to know, I guess we could ask Rick DeMaio, if they're ever going to stop naming these winter storms.
Oh, we've gone through that.
Oh, we have?
Well, yeah, okay. But before you were here.
Possibly
before
my time, yes.
Yeah, it's a little bit before your time. The deal is the Weather Channel names these storms, okay? That's just the Weather Channel's deal. In fact, the National Weather Service kind of winces and looks the other way when you talk about naming storms. There's a promo we ran on here of me yelling at the Weather Channel about naming storms. They're not...
They're going to name it after you.
They're
next.
Not. They don't have names, folks. They're just storms. They're just high pressure and low pressure and fronts and rain and sleet and snow and wind. They don't have personalities. They don't have names. Now, see, now you got me all excited. It's Cowgill. They don't have names.
My ears.
Have I made my point? And so, and I can't watch the Weather Channel anymore, especially in the winter. In the summer, it's okay because they don't name the storms because they've got the hurricanes that have names.
Well, considering we're
But then I watch the, you know, I'll turn on the Weather Channel because there's an event and I want to see radars or something and very quickly. And then they start talking about the name of the storm and then I have to turn them off.
Considering where the Learning Channel and the History Channel have gone, I'm surprised they still talk about weather on the Weather Channel.
Well, they also have their special, The Day Weather Changed the Emmy Awards.
Oh, brother.
You know, that those kinds of programs.
They have, like, a reality show based around
meteorologists. You know, they should have a bunch of meteorologists in a dorm room.
Yeah.
Put DeMaio in there. Put Tom Skilling there. Put all these guys there and have some kind of reality show. That'd be a stitch. Okay. All right. Lots going on today. We're going to start in the first hour with B. Johnson, who has written a book called Zero Waste Home, The Ultimate Guide to Simplifying Your Life by Reducing Your Waste. Now, well... You'll hear what she's done. Some people would say she's gone over the top. I might be one of those people. But she also makes a lot of really, really good points. So I'm very eager to talk to her. If you want to get a head start, you can go to Zero Waste Home on Facebook or zerowastehome.blogspot.com if you want to see what she's up to. Rick DeMille Weather will tell us why we still name storms at the Weather Channel. I'm sorry. I'm going to start crying. Then in the second hour, Josh Mogerman from the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. We talked last week. I talked briefly about JCAR, which is the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules in the state of Illinois, which had met pretty much in secret and redid the IDNR fracking rules and then released them, except they didn't release them because they were secret until just the other day. And they were released, and the NRDC has taken a look at the new rules in for fracking in Illinois and has some comments on them, and I'm going to talk to Josh Mogerman about that. So we're going to see what we're really getting. And if you want, you can always read more about this stuff, even ahead of my conversations. Go to mikenovak.net/, well, just click on this week's show. You can always see what I'm up to there. I always have links. I always have comments. I hope you take advantage of that. I actually had a woman who wrote to me this week from California, said, really like what you write there. So she's the one reading it. That's great. And then at the end of the show, we'll talk a little bit. You know, the city of Chicago is still picking up your yard waste. Good for them, but it's only till the 21st, which I believe is this Friday. If you want to get that done, you have to call 311. So it's the last week of that. And also, you might remember that last week I talked to Cassandra Francis, who is the president of Friends of the Parks, about the sighting of the Lucas Museum on the lakefront. Well, guess what? Friends of the Parks filed a lawsuit against the city to keep the Lucas Museum from being on the lakefront.
Oh, it's on now.
Yeah, it's on now. I know. And I'm happy they did. I think that's a good thing. Get it out of there. And I keep saying this is a mayoral issue for you folks running for mayor. You know, Chuy Garcia, Bob Fioretti, you guys running against Rahm. Here's a ready-made campaign issue. I will keep the lakefront free and clear. I will keep the Lucas Museum off of the lakefront. I'm telling you, it's a ready-made campaign issue. I haven't heard anybody jump up and grab it yet. Maybe they're afraid of George Lucas.
I feel like not being Rahm is a pretty strong campaign thing all by itself already.
Not being Rahm? Yeah, that could be. Who knows?
Please vote, everyone. Please.
Too late. Oh, you mean coming up?
Yeah.
No, I know what you
mean.
I knew what you meant.
Mike.
There's always another election. Here's the philosophy. There's always another election that people can stay home from.
Yeah.
How about that? Because they stayed home in droves the other week. And remember, folks, as I said before the election, if you didn't vote, I don't want to know you. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to pet your dog. I'm not interested in your kids.
Well, unless you were one of the many disenfranchised voters who...
Well, if you tried and couldn't vote, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
That's a very, very different thing.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to B. Johnson, I need to do a thank you because last week I started the Mike Novak Referral Network. And in that time, hundreds of my listeners and followers have gone to mikenovak.net to check out the new referral network. And you do that by going to the homepage and look for the thing that says referral network, new. It says brand new. And you click on it and it takes you to the businesses that are supporting the Mike Novak Show. And you need to know that your support of those businesses that are supporting me has a major impact on whether we're going to be able to continue to do the show. But even better is that you can find companies and products you can trust who share your concerns about earth-friendly gardening and environmental issues. But let me say one more thing, because I'm trying one more thing starting this week. And I want you to go to the referral network, and if you're a business, I'd love to have you on it. Shoot me an email, mike@mikenovak.net. Now, any of you listen to Norman Goldman know that he's been working really hard to figure out what the model is for radio in the 21st century. It takes money and time to fight for a better world. You've heard that, as I said, on Norman Goldman, on Stephanie Miller Show, a lot of other programs on this show, or on this station, on WCPT. And I'm going to say the same thing. And so I'm asking you, if you want to keep the Mike Novak Show on the air, working for green gardening, a cleaner and safer environment, local food and local businesses, and all the other issues you hear about only on this program, and I have so many people who call in and write to me and say, you're the only person talking about these issues, well, I could use your help. And here's how you do it. Just, again, go to mikenovak.net, M-I-K-E-N-O-W-A-K. And on the homepage, right at the top, it says, support the Mike Novak Show. You want to put your money where your mouth is? You like what you hear on Sunday? Send me a contribution. Now, I'm not a 501c3. I got to tell you straight up front. You don't get a tax write-off for it. It's like a political campaign where you put your money down and you hope something good comes out of it, like a candidate you support. But in my case, I'm going to be here talking about these issues. In the case of a candidate, that candidate might win and that candidate might not win. And the candidate might win and turn around and stab you in the back anyway. I'm going to do what I've done in the past, and I will continue to do that if you will support the show. Now, you don't have to. Obviously, it's free on the air. My podcasts are free. I do that on purpose. Even with my advertisers, I keep my commercials in the show. It's a value added for them because I want you to know about these advertisers and buy their products. Listen, this is what we call 21st century progressive capitalism, I guess. And this is how we stay on the air. So I hope some of you will support me. I appreciate all those who have to this point. I love my sponsors. Go to the Mike Novak Show referral network. Support those people. Tell them you support me. And let's keep this thing going, because it ain't easy, folks. It ain't easy. All right, we'll be back with B. Johnson in just a couple of minutes.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Sound red alert. Shields up. Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe? Author of my favorite children's stories.
Captain, I am attempting to access a copy of the masterpiece. It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
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 Yes, Mr. Watt.
Yes, Captain. Aroundtheblockpress.com.
How many times can I say it?
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
And with that, we come into the green room. Welcome in B. Johnson, who's the author of Zero Waste Home, the ultimate guide to simplifying your life by reducing your waste. B., good morning.
Good morning.
And you're in California, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And what's weather like there today?
Well, it's so early in the morning, it's kind of hard to tell, but it doesn't look like it's going to rain. Sadly, we're desperate for rain here.
Yes, you are. Oh, my goodness. I hope you get it, because I know folks out there, and it's just been nasty. It's just been terrible. Folks who are interested in making a difference on the planet should probably take a look at your blog, pick up this book. And I want to start with the five R's, which you start with, because I think it's important to jump off from that point. And they are, of course, well, some people may have heard reduce, reuse, recycle. Those are the middle three. You start with refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot. And I would add one more to that, B, which is repeat. You know, do all those things, and then add the sixth R. You know, rinse and repeat.
And it's very important to follow these R's in order. It's not about zero waste. It's not about recycling. Basically recycling a lot and reducing a little bit. It's actually, if you follow the five R's, if you refuse a maximum of things, then you have less to reduce, and then you have less to even reuse, and then you have less to recycle, and so on. So it is basically the five R's is an upside down pyramid. It is very important to follow them in order.
And by the way, folks, if you're listening and you're trying to place that accent, that is French, correct, B?
That's right. Can't hide it.
She started off in France and now lives here. And you go back there quite regularly, don't you?
Yeah, we go back every summer for about a month.
Uh-huh. All right. Getting back to the five R's and how to do that, as you point out repeatedly in your book, that you need to do those in order. Why is that?
Well, because this lifestyle is not about recycling more. It's actually about recycling less. And people put a lot of emphasis today about recycling, but there is a lot of things that we can actually eliminate. There is a lot of recyclables that we don't even need. But every time we take something that we do not need, every time we consume or we buy something that we don't really need, it takes resources to make these things, and then it will take energy to recycle those things. So this lifestyle is definitely about living simply, about making room in your life for what matters most. For us, it's experiences, and this lifestyle based on experiences versus stuff has been very much an eye-opener for our family. It brought us closer, it's made us healthier, it saved us a huge amount of money and a huge amount of time.
I think folks get the idea if they're recycling, they're doing their job. As you point out, that's at the back end of things. I sometimes liken it to the tail wagging the dog. It's not exactly an accurate metaphor, but it's somewhere in that ballpark, which is to say, by the time we recycle, as you just pointed out, we've already created the goods, and now we have to figure out what to do with them to get them back into use. And ultimately, like with plastics, You can recycle ones and twos, but ultimately those products become grosser and grosser, and so the end result is what? A plastic piece of lumber that you can use as a park bench. But after that, it goes into the landfill, right?
Exactly. So we see basically plastics as a product that ends up in the landfill anyways, so we try to avoid them at all costs. And there is today, we live actually quite nicely without them, especially without the disposables. There is a lot of product that we've simply replaced, or there are a lot of disposable products that we've simply replaced with reusables. And those reusables allow us to make cumulative savings over time. And it's really been amazing for us. My husband at first was not really on board with the zero waste lifestyle. He told me, well, it's going to cost us too much money. And I had already purchased quite a few reusables, and we were grocery shopping at the farmer's market. And he said, I got to make the calculation here because I'm afraid it's costing us too much. And he found out that by comparing our bank statements between our pre-zero waste lifestyle with our zero waste lifestyle, he found that we were saving 40% on our overall spending. So then he basically he got on board right away when he saw those numbers.
So you say from your old lifestyle, and you were, very, very traditional or conventional, let us say, conventional American conventional, which, yeah. You had the big house, you had the lawn, you had...
Especially coming over to the U.S. as a foreigner, I wanted to live what I believed was the American dream as seen on TV, which meant indeed having a large home and big SUVs and large refrigerators with food that, we would end up wasting. We were shopping at the big box stores and so on, and all these things. Even just to furnish a large home, you have to buy things. But in the end, we found that, these things were not making us happier at all. So when we downsized our lives, we found a new way of living that we found makes our lives much richer than the previous one.
Yeah, but your first mistake was watching TV to find out what the
exactly.
American... I mean, and I'm going to be honest with you. It's all lies. All of it. It's all marketing. It's all conspicuous consumption. I tell people, I've said on the program before, and I talk a lot about gardening on this show. If you're putting chemicals on your lawn, you've been brainwashed. You've been brainwashed by television and the advertising, because their whole deal is you can't live without this stuff. And as you've proven, you can live without it. But the thing is, the people who have the money to advertise on television are the ones who advocate more stuff. And
yeah, I totally agree.
So there are several lessons that come out of this, though. One, as we're approaching Black Friday, I was talking to Kathleen yesterday, my partner, and she said, well, we don't know anybody who actually shops on Black Friday, do we? And I thought about it, and I thought, no, I don't. I can't imagine anybody. But then I wouldn't be surprised if somebody did. But, that's a good place to start, is why are you out there on Black Friday pushing and shoving and buying stuff? And it's all junk, believe me. It's just junk, and we don't need it, most of it, right?
Yeah, there are things that you don't need, and the people that you're going to give it to, even themselves, they don't need. So we like to think of ourselves as great gifters and as people that are very generous by buying a bunch of presents. But in the end, if you're giving a present that someone doesn't really need, and no one really needs all the stuff we're giving out, then you're actually creating a big problem for the environment, and you're adding clutter to your basically the people whose presence you give, you're adding clutter to their lives, and you're burdening their lives. So I think, yeah, we got to think twice about going out there and fighting the crowds to get something that's totally needed.
Actually, I'm going to send out a challenge to my listeners. Let's come up with a slogan for boycotting Black Friday. I don't know what it is. Helen, maybe you will think of something wonderful, too. But we have to come up with a slogan for just leaving Black Friday in the dust. And I don't know what it is. It just popped into my head that we should do this. So
hashtag hang out with your mom on Thanksgiving.
Hashtag hang out with your mom. I like that. There we go. Now, something a little more clever. And by the way, we're talking to Bea Johnson, who is the author of Zero Waste Home. You know, one of the things, Bea, that I think the hardest thing of all is your number one R, which is refuse. And I'll give you an example of that, because I stopped on my way to the station this morning to get a cup of coffee. All right. And I decided I know one of the baristas there, and I talked to her and I said, out of 100 people, how many do you think bring their own cups to this place? And she said, on a good day, 2.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, on a good day. And I was horrified. But I was horrified but not surprised, because I never see anybody bring their own cup in there. I never see anybody bring a reusable bag to the supermarket. I saw a guy the other week, and I went up to him and I said, "Hey, I'm so glad you're doing that." And then he looked at me like I was crazy and walked away. But you got to be careful about that. But how do we get people to change that mindset, that it's really not that difficult to be smarter, to be a smarter shopper?
I mean, it definitely takes a while to get a system. I can't tell anyone that you can adopt the zero waste lifestyle overnight. It took me some time to figure things out, but then I actually found that, you know, whatever practice we were, alternative we were adopting, was made us feel so much better, and in the end saved us so much time and money that the work that it took us to figure out a system was totally worth it. And today people are amazed at the fact that we only generate a quart-sized jar of waste per year for my family of four, but to our family, it's like, it's really no big deal. We don't talk about that jar. We don't talk about the little amount of waste we create, because it's totally part of our routine. What we do is automatic and easy and simple. But it's just, yes, it did take a little bit of time at first to get adjusted, and it took a little time to declutter our home, give away the things that we didn't truly need. We had to learn how to refuse, because that's, you know, today we're in our consumerist society, we're definitely the target of many marketing goods. And it's difficult to walk down the street and not be approached by someone who tries to put something in your hands. And I think we've been like robots, used to just taking those things because they are either free or we don't want to hurt the giver's feelings. But we found that by saying no, it actually made it much easier for us to keep a simple lifestyle. What we don't bring into our home won't need to be decluttered, won't need to be thrown away, won't need to be discarded or recycled.
I want to repeat that so people understand that you, in a year's time, say that you produce a quart jar worth of waste that ends up in a landfill. I mean, how do you even measure that?
Well, we measure it by putting it in a jar.
What's in it then?
It is basically the items that we cannot refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, or rot, and such as, for example, the joints, the caulking from the bits in there are like they have hard names or names that difficult to say exactly what it is. But for example, the caulking from the back of my sink that has gone dark and moldy that I could not clean, so I replaced it. Wrapper, I don't know what you call that either. Basically, the wrapper that you put around handlebars of bikes. I don't know what they're called.
The grip?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, the grip on a handlebar, okay.
Exactly, like a foam. So my husband basically really fell apart, so he removed it and put in a new one.
Yeah.
There is a bike cable, brake, you know, or a brake cable, whatever. There is some fruit stickers. We can eliminate those by going to the farmer's market, but sometimes if I'm working that day or if I have a bunch of things going on, I can't go to the farmer's market. So then I buy my fruits and vegetables from the grocery store, and then I end up having the fruit stickers. We don't use Band-Aids. We don't even have Band-Aids at our house. But when the kids went to get a vaccination, before we could say no and refuse it, they put a Band-Aid on their arms.
That's a hard part. That's a hard part. It's like people, they give you stuff, they hand you stuff, and if you say no, they get offended. And you write about that in your book. You say you don't want to be mean. You just want to be firm and say no. And you have these great lines, excuses why you can't take it. What are some of the lines you use on people when they try to give you stuff?
The two that we use the most is no, thank you. We are trying to simplify our life. But we're not trying. We've actually simplified it, but it makes it easier this way for them to understand. Or especially for throwaways, we say no, thank you. We don't have a trash can. And then they don't even ask questions. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, I understand. So they just don't give whatever they're trying to give us.
I like that. We don't have a trash can. That's great. That's brilliant. It's like we don't have a trash can. There's nothing we can do about that. By the way, B, we're talking to B Johnson, the author of Zero Waste Home. She's got a blog. She's got a book. You can go to my website and find all that information. Go to this week's show. We got a tweet from who else? But Ron Cowgill at Mighty House, whose show is on here on WCPT, Saturday mornings, 8 to 11 a.m., he's got a hashtag for the Black Friday thing. He says, hashtag Berry Black Friday. I like it. Berry Black Friday.
That's awesome.
That's very concise. Ron, you get a ding for that. All right. Now, on this show, B, we talk a lot about the stuff that goes on in the kitchen and grocery shopping, growing your own food and canning it and that sort of thing. So my listeners get that. But there are some things that still thwart you. For instance, junk mail is actually one of the banes of your existence, isn't it?
Yeah, junk mail is one of those things that we take great steps at refusing. And again, this is one of those things that was a pain at first when we attacked it. But today, we no longer receive junk mail. We've eliminated it, and junk mail is one of those things, just like single-use plastics, such as plastic bags, or unsustainable practices, such as exchanging business cards, or any freebies that you're basically given at a conference. Every time we take something that we do not need, every time we throw simply the junk mail from the mailbox, or we place it from the mailbox into the recycling can, and we're saying, I love junk mail, please send me more, and more will be sent out to you. Every time you take a plastic bag from the grocery store or a free plastic pen from a conference, you're saying, I love plastic pens, please drill more oil from the ground to create a replacement, and more will be created. So it is important to take steps to refuse those things. And for junk mail, we've signed up on a pre-opt-out screen and catalog choice, and dmachoice.org. Those are like the three main websites that will help you eliminate junk mail.
Those websites are in the book, so you can find those. You also have those on your blog site, right?
Yep.
So if you want to get rid of junk mail, and I think your point is well taken that if you just accept it and you don't actually fight against it, it is their invitation to send you more. And as you point out in the book, and you just said, folks put it in the recycling and they say, well, at least I'm recycling it. Yeah, but it's still there. You haven't.
Yeah, you're supporting an unsustainable practice just by recycling it.
Yeah. The thing that you point out that You've already affected me because there's one habit I'm going to change. And it's very interesting, which is swag bags. You go to these conferences, and whether they're environmental conferences or gardening conferences or something,
yep,
you got all this junk that they hand you in a reusable bag, that usually now, because they say, well, you can reuse the bag. Okay, great, whatever. But
do you need the bag? You probably don't, because you already have bags at home.
Well, I've got a lot of them, but I go through them and in different orders, and I don't mind having them because they just keep getting reused over and over and over again. But the swag in the bag is often made of plastic. There's a lot of, again, junk that they give us, as you said, pens and whatever else. And the other thing is, I go to these conferences, and when they serve you food, it's on plastic plates or styrofoam plates, and they're not even recycling those. It's crazy that we don't think in that. But it's, at this point, it's very, very difficult to find out how to get that done. But once you've done it the first time, it makes it a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just, again, a learning how to rethink. And it takes about 3 weeks to change a habit. And this is the zero waste lifestyle, or zero waste for us is like a whole lifestyle. So it's not going to just take 3 weeks to learn how to do all this. But if you just do little things, and number one is to refuse what you do not need. So next time you go somewhere and they're giving you something, think twice about accepting it and ask yourself, do I truly need this? Is it going to add to my life? Don't I already have one at home? Yeah, generally the answer is yes. So it does take a little bit of exercise or mental awareness to say no, but once you get the hang of it, then it's automatic.
That is B. Johnson, author of Zero Waste Home. We're out of time, but before I let you go, B, is there any, if folks want specifics, if they want particulars, you and I have been talking in generalities a little bit here, but that's the way these things go. However, if you want specifics about the kitchen, the bathroom, the bedroom, housekeeping, your workspace, your kids and your school, holidays and gifts, bet you got a lot to say about that. And out and about, all this other stuff, you need to get the book and look at all the specifics there. Before I let you go, is there anything else that you'd like to add here about what we've talked about this morning?
Well, if I can leave with just one thing, is I just want people to understand that shopping is voting. So every time we buy something, we are either sustaining a practical or a sustainable practice or an unsustainable one. So it is important for the consumer to understand that he is the leader of the manufacturing world. The manufacturers only make what we buy and what we're supporting with our money. So please make the right choices.
I like that idea. Every time you shop, you're voting. Yeah.
Yeah.
For one way of the world working or the other. That really makes a lot of sense. B, thank you so much. Again, it's called Zero Waste Home. Scribner is the publisher. You can pick up a copy. Maybe this is the one gift you get for somebody this season. Because they probably don't have this. But you can also go to her blog, and that is zerowastehome.blogspot.com, and find out all this information. Good luck in the future, and good luck changing minds, B.
Thank you very much, Mike, for having me.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
In the Green Room.
You dig.
Okay, Mr. Smooth here. Hey, it's kind of weird when you can mark the exact date that the gardening season ended on your block. On mine, it was last Tuesday. That was the day that I went into the community garden with Kathleen, and we harvested as much kale, Swiss chard, and beets as we could carry. Then we went into the house and rebooted our frozen fingers. The November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine reminds you, though, that indoor gardening can be fun, too. The cover story is written by Melinda Myers, who has appeared on this show many times, and she says that terrariums are back. But this time, you might want to consider putting succulents in them to take advantage of their color, texture, and low moisture needs. It sounds like a great idea, and you should see some of the beautiful photographs of succulent terrariums that are in the latest issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Then there's my column on the inside back page, which has a low tolerance of or respect for popular Christmas carols. Don't say I didn't warn you. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, pick one up at newsstands all over town. Get a subscription or give one this holiday season. Easy peasy. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Rick DeMille weather in 1 minute.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It's the Mike Novak Show on WCPT AM and FM. We go now to the phone and bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Mike. Speaking of recycling, are we recycling last year's snow?
Oh, my goodness. What happened this week? It's like the bottom fell out. All of a sudden, it's like, now, come on. You know, I keep thinking, okay, we'll have cold weather for a couple of days, and then we'll go back to the 50s. And
I told you last week it was going to get cold and it was going to stay cold.
I know you did.
Yeah.
I didn't believe you. No, actually, I did believe you. I was just doing the wish thing, hoping that it wouldn't be that.
And you remember I told you that we were going to get an early taste of winter, and have to say it's here.
And you also said it was going to be wet, white, and wild.
And wild, yeah.
is this a start?
No. And it's a great question because that's basically what I've been getting from just about everybody. People say, is this it? And it typically, if you go into a cold pattern this early in the month of November, usually it'll be about a 10 to 14 day hit, depending on the way the upper atmospheric winds are set up. You know, we talked about this last week, how it really took three things to develop this. You needed to have, you know, a large, expansive reservoir of cold air at the surface through much of eastern Canada. Much of North America was basically below normal for much of the spring, summer, and early fall. The pattern was beginning to get into what's called an omega block, where you have like the Greek letter omega. You take your finger on the left side, you go in and says, oh, you can't go in, you got to go all the way up in a big, you know, kind of three-quarter circle, then you come back down, you make a right, and that's the way the pattern was over Canada. And then we had, you know, what was Super Typhoon Nori, preceded by other typhoons, you know, basically buckled the jet stream across the North Pacific. And it was really that storm 10 days ago that kind of kick-started all this. You can kind of see it happening. And then, you know, once you, you know, it's like preparing a garden or a vegetable garden for the, you know, for the growing season. Once you get all the ingredients in and you do the right stuff to it, you know, Mother Nature kind of takes over, you know, in the short term. And that's exactly what happened. And You know, record amounts of snow across northern Wisconsin. Basically, when I say northern Wisconsin, I mean the areas adjacent to the Michigan state line. So they were basically getting two types of snow, system snow from the big storm and then lake effect snow. But you look at the amount of cold air that's down here, three consecutive days where temperatures didn't get above freezing. We haven't done that in, you know, almost 70 years, and it's the third time we've only done it this early. And then you get the snow that comes in yesterday. Some of the city got, you know, basically, oh, maybe a half inch to an inch. Up here in Evanston, we got a solid inch. But, you know, across areas north and west of the city, O'Hare officially came in with an inch of snow. You get up into southern areas of Wisconsin, 3 inches of Racine, 4.5 Lake Geneva, 5 in Williams Bay. And it's snowing again today. And it's amazing how snow and cold love each other. It's like soil and water. If you do it right, it will grow.
Yeah.
Clearly, it's keeping stuff around here. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Well, hey, and let's not forget the snow belt in Indiana. I saw photographs of listeners who had a foot of snow down there.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just crazy.
Yeah, and Mike, I have to say that was a big miss by the Weather Service. Not our Weather Service, the ones over in North Webster. And I feel sorry for those guys because they're usually really good on nailing down significant lake effect snow events. And prior to that event developing, there was not even a winter weather advisory out or a lake effect snow advisory. It went straight to one narrow band of heavy snow that was literally visibility when that was probably down about a couple hundred feet. But if you look at a snow map, and you know, I have to say it, in to their regard of the difficulty and challenges of lake effect snow, this is about a 5 mile wide band. That was it. That produced nearly a foot of snow, as you mentioned, but everywhere else around it was like 2 to 4, maybe 1 to 2. It was amazing, but the problem was it hit right at the morning rush hour, and that's a very, very you know, high volume traffic area. Once you go west of South Bend on 94, Interstate 80 and 90, yeah, right into that area. So you couldn't have had a more worse situation kind of pan out in that particular situation.
Okay, we have to address. I don't know if you caught the beginning of the show, but Ron Cowgill from Mighty House called in to complain about the Weather Channel naming storms again.
Oh, God, I hate it, yeah.
And
I think the last one was Bozeman or something?
I don't know, because I find it really hard to turn it on now in the winter. You know, and that's bad, because they have chased me away as a viewer. And
you and a lot of other people.
And I don't – and that just – it's. I go to my computer now, and and I look up a weather map there, because I can't deal with it.
Here's the thing. They should do this. They should just name them letters. Like, we have Winter Storm A, Winter Storm B.
There we go. Like the cat in the hat.
Right. which letter is this? It's E. We've changed it. We're doing just letters. Oh, you know, I like that. E. And there's F. So it's the sixth one in the right. There you go.
Little Storm A, Little Storm B, Little Storm C, Little Storm D.
And the thing about it also is, well, what's a storm? You know, to some people,
right,
you know, 1 to 2 inches, you know, across the northern plains on a Monday morning is nothing. 1 to 2 inches in Chicago is a storm when it's not forecast and there's no salt on the road. So I know it's bad. And, you know, it was bad from the beginning and it's still bad.
It hasn't gotten any better, and I haven't gotten any more used to it. In fact, it's even more annoying now than it was before because they're doing it as a marketing ploy. Okay. So I'm hoping that somebody from the Weather Channel is listening to this broadcast right now.
You know what?
Please.
I spoke to both Mike Seidel and Jim Cantore about it. So both of them, I text Mike Seidel all the time. I spoke to Jim Cantore. I go, Jim, so what's up with the name? He goes, what about it? And I go, well, what do you think about it? He goes, what do you think? And he never answered the question. I felt like I was talking to Nixon during 1974, you know. He just wasn't coming out with an answer, which I think was obviously he was not, you know, and this is off the record, but I don't think he likes it either. But, you know, it's marketing and something that the Weather Channel is trying to do. So, you know, we move on from that, right?
Yeah, we'll move on. But I have to say it one more time because the winter has started and now they're naming the storms and I'm just begging them not to do it. I got it. Tom, my listener, Tom, wrote to me this morning. He says, I've got a name for the storm that left the snow, but you can't say it on the radio. All right?
Yeah, it's four letters. It begins with the word either F or S, right?
I won't say that. He's just got a name for it, okay?
No, I totally get it. But, you know, it's amazing when you look back even at, you know, some of the cold temperatures across the United States. This all came southward from this area of high pressure that was basically Arctic. And I think you can feel it out there, the air. The last couple of days before the snow hit yesterday, it's very, very dry. This is pure Arctic air. And Arctic air is basically an air mass that develops over large, flat terrain and doesn't get kind of influenced by mountains or oceans and things like that. And that's basically what we have over us. And one of the things that I talked about at a couple of snow conferences early in the year was how the coolness of the Great Lakes might actually inhibit the amount of lake effect snow we get early on in the season. The only thing that would overcome that is incredibly cold air. Well, the incredibly cold air overcame that, and we had, you know, 30 to 40-inch snow amounts across the UP of Michigan. And oddly enough, Mike, in the last minute and a half that we have here, it's only going to get colder. There's a weak Arctic front coming through right now.
No!
This little bit of snow that we have over us today may deposit another half inch, but it looks like some of the streets are actually wet, so I think we'll be okay from that standpoint. We go back into the lower 20s tonight. The core of the cold air will be with us late tomorrow afternoon. I wouldn't be surprised if we barely make to 24 to 25 tomorrow, and then the temperature actually drops through the afternoon. So tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow night is the core of the cold air, wind-blown snow showers. It's going to feel more like the end of January, and that's what it's been feeling like around here. But it's going to be really cold tomorrow afternoon into Tuesday. But the long-term pattern suggests this is going to shift back to a more Pacific flow. So I wouldn't be surprised by about the 23rd, about the 24th, we're talking about temperatures back into the 40s and 50s around here.
Yay! That's what I wanted to hear. Now, that's a forecast.
One quick thing here. Depending on the extent of snow cover that we have will depend on how much the cold air is moderated. I've seen these trends before. Cold air always wins out. So if anything, we're looking for a very, very, very stormy second half of the month of November.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's showbiz, baby. All right. Thanks a lot. And I'll talk to you next week.
See you, Mike.
Bye-bye. I'm cold already. All right. Second hour. Some fracking news and, well, what the new rules mean for Illinois. Stick around for that.
I got a little change in my pocket, going jingle-lang-a-lang. Wants to call you on the telephone, baby. I give you a ring, but each time we talk, I get the same old thing. Always no hooky-duckies until I get a wedding ring. My honey, my baby, don't put my love up on no shelf. She said, don't give me no lines and keep your hands to yourself.
Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM and FM in Chicago. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company, because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And did I mention that Attack of the Killer Asparagus makes a wonderful holiday gift, and it's not that much.
I feel like you might have mentioned that.
Not enough. That's the way I feel about it, that I have not mentioned that. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. Okay? Just thought I'd mention it, okay? Welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. Let's just do this, okay? Let's go to the phone lines and bring in Josh Mogerman from the NRDC. He is the Deputy Director, National Media in Chicago. How are you, Josh?
I'm well, Mike. How are you this morning?
Well, when the warmer weather gets here later in the month, I'll be great. Because I still have bulbs I haven't put in the ground. That's me. That's how I roll. It's like, okay.
It's late.
It is a little late, but if it warms up, I will be hacking through the turf, believe me. And getting those things in. I'm not the only one. I know I'm not the only one out there who didn't get their bulbs in the ground. I was a little busy, but, you know, I got to ask you a question that's kind of off topic. Josh, but I know you pay attention to these things, and that is, I'm trying to reconcile President Barack Obama's going to China and talking to them and getting them to commit to a reduction in greenhouse gases. That's great. To his saying, I'm not sure I'm going to sign this Keystone XL bill, and I'm hoping he vetoes it, and it looks like he might. And then turning around and saying, but TPP is great for the American public. And then I just go, what? You guys must have a similar reaction, I would think.
Yeah, you know, it is an ongoing problem where there seems to be this unhinged connection between economic and environmental policy. There's not a willingness or an understanding of how those two things connect and the impacts that they have on each other. And as a result, you get these sort of things that seem completely at odds with each other, just like you're talking about.
Yeah, and I keep hearing Ross Perot in my head, that giant sucking sound, you know, except the giant sucking sound is going to be going out to the Pacific instead of to Mexico now. Amazing how the more things change, the more they remain the same. Speaking of that, there's a segue for you. The more Illinois politics changes, the more it's exactly the way it always works, like smoke-filled rooms where really bad policy comes out of, and it's happened again with the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, or JCAR, regarding hydraulic fracturing in the state, or fracking, as it is commonly known. We found out last week that JCAR had passed the new rules for fracking in Illinois. And this is after this whole process. First, we passed a bill, and then the DNR got its hands on it and wrote rules and then published them. And a lot of people's heads exploded, and Kathleen says I say that too much, so I have to stop saying that. But they did anyway, and 30,000 people commented, and then IDNR rewrote the rules, and then turned them over to JCAR, and then JCAR closed the doors and said, we'll deal with this ourselves, folks. Nothing to see here. And then they published them, just in the past couple of days. So, the question I have to ask, even before we get to the substance of this, Josh, because you're with the NRDC, and weren't you guys involved in some of these negotiations to get the rules written?
Yeah, we've been part of a core group of folks who have been involved from the beginning, from helping to determine what the statute should look like all the way through JCAR determining, you know, what those final rules to execute the statute would look like. So
yeah,
we've been involved. It's been a frustrating process, a very Illinois process.
You bet.
But in the end, it's important to remember that it's important to take part in the process. We found ourselves 2 years ago, when this whole process started, at a place where there were no laws about horizontal drilling. There were no laws about fracking on the books in the state of Illinois. And we were in the middle of a giant land rush where 250,000 acres were being bought up for mineral rights expressly to start drilling for oil and gas in southeastern Illinois. And where we find ourselves now is with a series of flawed rules that don't go, I think, as far as anybody feels they should, but that do put important public protections in place that just simply weren't there 2 years ago.
Okay. And a lot of the outrage in the last week or so has really been about, because they voted on the rules. JCAR, the committee, co-chaired by Senator Don Harmon and Representative Timothy L. Schmitz, voted 11 to 1 to pass these rules, but then didn't say what the rules were. They came out of this committee, and there is the sneaking suspicion that industry people were involved in this final deal, but environmental people were not. What do you know about that?
Well, there were significant changes. There were significant changes that to our view, all favored what industry would be looking for, which is getting rid of specificity in the rules and creating a fair amount of loopholes. Those are things that weren't there in the draft that IDNR sent over. We knew that there would be some changes that were made. The idea of JCAR is to make sure that the law, the statute, connects with the rules, and there was some discussion that perhaps IDNR had overstepped. We didn't think that was the case, but industry certainly did. And in the end, many of the things that industry had been pushing for, lo and behold, have appeared in this final draft. So it does seem that there was a lot of discussion. There was input given to JCAR, but it was very, very limited from the environmental and community group side, and it certainly has a lot that, from what we've heard through back channels, that the industry folks had very, very strong, intense, ongoing connections with folks at JCAR, and in the end, you can see that in the statutes, or in the final rules.
Yeah, do we even know who voted what way? I mean, there was only one vote against the new rules. Will that ever be released? Is that something you can FOIA? That is use the Freedom of Information Act to get information out?
I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. It does seem like that that would be a FOIA-able, appropriate information for the public.
I want to know who voted for this, and it was 11 people, and one person voted against it. Okay.
I thought it was actually one abstention.
Oh, is that what it is, an abstention? Oh, well.
Yeah, and I believe that the abstention, I'm blanking on who it is, but I believe that information is available right now, that who the non-voting member was.
I'd like to know. Still like to know. On the other hand, it doesn't mean as much. An abstention is like, it's going to pass anyway, so why should I go out on a limb? You know, why should I have ethics involved in this? We're talking to Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council. Let's go into some of these specifics here. I should note that your senior attorney, Ann Alexander, wrote about this, and I've got the link on my website, MikeNovak.net, because it's pretty intense, and it goes on in great detail. She writes about the ways that some of the final rules have been compromised. And she actually said, "Oh, let me say one more thing before I get to that." And it's, and I had mentioned some of the groups that were kind of unhappy about this. And one of those is Southern Illinoisans Against Fracking Our Environment, or SAFE. Annette McMichael wrote that the rules were negotiated behind closed doors without meaningful scientific review. We are not allowed to review the new rules until November 15th. And that was, she wrote that last week. When they are posted on the Illinois Register, there is no doubt they will be woefully inadequate to protect Illinois residents from the known harms horizontal fracking has brought to residents across America. And the other thing is Jeff Biggers, who's a writer and who I had on the show a few weeks ago to talk about the coal boom in Illinois. He is the author of Reckoning at Eagle Creek. Really kind of went off on the process and some of the folks who were involved in it. I mean, he says that the Illinois Environmental Council got thrown under the bus. That's basically the way he puts it. Do you feel the same way, Josh?
Well, I think it's important to go into this with your eyes open, and that is this Illinois. We don't necessarily think of this state as a state with an extractive economy, but as Jeff points out, there is a coal boom going on in this state, and the lobbyists for fossil fuel interests have always enjoyed a very, very significant influence in Springfield, and that seems to be growing, not shrinking. So knowing that was the case, I think we didn't, I don't think there was any expectation that somehow we would be able to force something through that those guys were going to be able to kill, and certainly force something through from a distance, from not taking part in the process. We worked for two different sessions of the legislature trying to get a moratorium bill in place to put a stop to fracking, to ensure that we did do the sorts of things that I think Jeff and the state folks are pointing to, which I think is right. We do need to have scientifically grounded rules. For 2 years, we had our lobbyists going around to legislators' offices to legislators' offices throughout downstate and around. We had a moratorium bill that seemed to have we were getting close to having enough support to be able to move it forward. But as soon as the Madigans decided that they felt a rulemaking process was essential to move through, I think we were all left with a decision, and that is, do we go into a take part in the rulemaking process, or do we just let it play out? And the other thing to keep in mind is that at that same time, there was an ALEC-inspired bill, fracking bill, that had been making its way through the legislature with a lot of fracking loopholes that the environmental community, including the Illinois Environmental Council, worked very, very hard to kill and stall. You know, it's I don't think anybody feels that these rules are enough, certainly not enough to make fracking safe. They're certainly not enough to get all the protections in place that people need. But there are protections there, and there are some very important protections there. And I think we're going to need to keep going back to Springfield and doing what we can to ensure that those other protections that people need get put in place. And that's going to be a very, very heavy lift.
But it's
something that I think people are going to do.
Isn't the horse out of the barn now with this? People, if you go to Springfield, they're going to say, "Hey, we got a law, and we just got JCAR just approved it." And what's the process now? Do they vote on it again?
Well, I think there's going to have to be an effort to put additional and newer laws in place on top of this. And I think you're already seeing groups looking at other venues with which to address some of these issues. There's already a lot of legal maneuvering that has started, and it wouldn't surprise me to see more.
All right. Let's look at some of this. You know, your own attorney, Ann Alexander, wrote in her blog, and I've got the link to that on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. As I always tell people to do that, she says, all in all, the results provide a sad object lesson in what happens when you exclude the public from a process that directly affects it. DNR's concessions to industry on any given issue may not have seemed particularly important to government officials behind the locked doors, but are plenty important to the citizens who now have to live with the decision made without their input. So we'll say it once again, addressing fracking and its formidable risks through the Illinois political process rather than setting up open and systematic deliberations involving the people bearing those risks was asking for trouble from the get-go. But we have what we have, which we continually bear in mind, beats the fracking Wild West we started out with before the statute was passed last year. She contends that the statute's protective measures remain in place. What's been lost, rather, is some of the regulatory language developed by DNR to better define and implement the statute's terms so as to foster consistently robust implementation and limit court battles over interpretation. And that some of that is what you've said already this morning, Josh. She starts with elimination of decision-making criteria. Says the final version reflects a sweeping elimination of language establishing specific decision-making criteria and required factual findings where the statute states only a broad general condition. That's something that you've already addressed to some degree. Do you want to go into a little more detail about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that you see across the board on these is an introduction of very vague language. And that is important for industry because ultimately, as people try to flex their muscles and employ some of the protections that are in these rules, if the language is vague, that leaves a lot more openness to interpretation in the courts. And it makes those rules much harder for IDNR to enforce it. And so what she's talking about here and in many of the other places is you had very specific language that outlined things that made it very clear, you know, what's right, what's wrong, what the expectations are for companies to live up to. That has in many, many cases been scrubbed, and that's going to mean a lot of stuff in court where you have judges who are left to sort of figure out and fill in the blanks on their own on those. And that is something that tilts an industry's favor.
Something else she writes, more burdensome hearing request requirements. The statute contains intentionally minimal requirements for requesting a public hearing regarding a permit application. The requester need only submit a short and plain statement describing a legally sufficient interest in the matter. The final version of the rules makes this required statement longer and a whole lot less plain. It's now even worse than DNR's initial draft on this point. So basically, now it's going to be really hard to even get a hearing to consider whether a fracking operation should go in your neighborhood.
Yeah, it really puts a burden on the public in this case. I mean, it basically says you're going to need a lawyer to be able to do this. And the intention originally on this was a very important protection that would allow people who had concerns, who were impacted, to be able to call for a hearing, to get all the information that they want and need, and to be able to express their concerns and the potential threats that it offered to their community. Now, that's not something that you can do quickly and easily. It's probably something that requires a lawyer, and I think this is something that a lot of groups around the state are going to have to spend some time looking at to see what sort of resources can be brought to bear to help.
Here's another one. And again, we're talking to Josh Mogerman from the NRDC. I'm looking at a blog post by NRDC attorney Ann Alexander. This one seems important. Elimination of the adversely affected definition. As she writes, we fought long and hard for language in the statute that broadly allows any person who is or may be affected to request a permit hearing. DNR added additional helpful language to guide the agency in assessing who falls into that category, but all that language is now gone. Wow.
Yeah, you know, the frackers want to move fast. And, you know, if you let a little thing like the public speaking up and expressing concerns about impacts they might be feeling, that slows things down. And that is counter to their agenda, and they are very well served by this change in the rules.
Elimination of discretionary setbacks is another one that Ann brings up. In order to implement the statutory requirement to ensure against threats to public health, DNR's August draft clarified the DNR can establish setbacks in addition to the minimum setback distances required in the statute were necessary to protect the public. She mentions, so for instance, a playground or community gathering place near a proposed well site and was not otherwise covered. And that language is gone too, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is something that I think we find really important, that there have been a lot of criticisms on issues of setbacks all the way through this process. I think that that in many cases those concerns are really justified. One of the big concerns is that we're now seeing more and more emerging research that confirms a lot of people's concerns about the air quality impacts and the air pollution that comes off of these drilling sites. And so it struck us as, and DNR, as important to be able to have some flexibility in looking at those setbacks and being able to expand them beyond what is outlined in the statute itself. And particularly, you know, those examples that you mentioned make perfect sense. If you're by a school, if you're by a playground, if you're by a hospital, by all means, the public requires additional protection from these potential impacts. And alas, that seems to have been pulled out.
And it seems to me that then you can go back to those things we talked earlier about, which, the setbacks are eliminated, and then the elimination of the adversely affected definition. So those play into each other, don't they? So, now you've got a situation like, hey, we've got a concern here. This school is near a fracking operation. Well, we also got rid of the language that allows you to contest that easily.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real concern. Just to be clear, the setbacks themselves have not been eliminated. What has been eliminated is IDNR's ability to prescribe bigger setbacks in areas where there may be more sensitivity. But yeah, I mean, you're getting to the crux of this, which is they've made it much harder for the public to engage in the process, and that was one of the most important things. It's something that we've seen associated with the oil and gas industry nationally, and it's something that unfortunately JCAR is empowering a little bit more here in Illinois.
We need somebody to talk to somebody on this committee. We need to talk to Don Harmon, Senator Don Harmon, and say, what were you guys thinking? What were you thinking here? It just seems like, this is such an important part of moving forward in Illinois, and it affects so many things and potentially contaminates our water and potentially exposes us to radiation, potentially exposes us to earthquakes. And it's harder to contest any of this because of the new regulations. We're talking to Josh Mogerman from the NRDC. Here's another one that your attorney Ann Alexander from NRDC writes. Speaking of radioactivity, there's scaled back regulation of radioactivity contamination. Responding to widespread concern, she writes, expressed in public comments that more was needed to address radioactive contamination associated with fracking, DNR's August draft built on basic statutory language concerning radioactive hazards to establish a reasonably comprehensive protocol for monitoring and mitigating radioactivity. Most of that is now gone, except for a few remaining provisions concerning testing of drill cuttings and flowback. Well, how much of this is gone? Is there going to be any testing at all, really?
I believe there will still be testing, but it's not the robust amount that I think most of us feel is necessary. And, this is the sort of thing where I think there may be opportunities to go back to Springfield and try and work to deal with some of these issues.
I'm sorry to, if I'm catching off guard on that. And how does that work again, in terms of these rules that have just come out of JCAR, does the General Assembly vote on them again before they become law?
No, they're law.
So all And it's because they've put these out there. Quinn doesn't have to sign it. Rauner doesn't have to sign it. It's done.
It's done.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look at limited duty to investigate geologic conditions. Ann writes, the regulations in principle require applicants to provide important information concerning geologic integrity of the formation to be fracked. This is where we get to the idea of the earthquakes. In the final version, the left hand takes away what the right hand gives. Applicants now have the express option to simply say they don't know that information. Well, there you go. It's the I don't know loophole. That's a little frustrating.
That's a lot frustrating. There's no doubt about it. That is a lot frustrating, and particularly when you're talking about areas that do have concerns about seismic issues. When you look at what's going on in some of the other states where there's a lot of fracking, and seeing increased seismic activity, that's something that is hugely concerning for people downstate, and it should be, frankly. And it's something, again, that I think more attention is going to have to be given to. And, ultimately, our representatives need to understand that there is going to be public pressure on this. There needs to be an understanding that people are unhappy, people are angry, and people are going to act on this. That's how we get these things fixed. That's how we get these things changed. The public process for comments on this earlier in the year was a good start in that respect. We got 30,000 comments on the first draft of these rules sent to IDNR. That was the most submitted on any rule in history in the state of Illinois, or at least of IDNR. And lo and behold, what happened? The response from IDNR was a much better, much more thought out, much stronger version of the rules. And that's unfortunately a lot of what Jay Carr rolled back. But until people in the state legislature come to understand that there is real public concern and anger over this, it's going to be hard to fix a lot of these problems.
I know. This is what's so amazing about the process. Okay, it kind of boils down to this, that it was, as other people have said before me, I'm reiterating some of what's out there already. This is a very public, open, transparent process all the way to JCAR. And then suddenly it wasn't. And suddenly the rules are changed and they're weakened considerably. Nobody knows how or why. And the people who pay are the people of Illinois who are going to pay the price for this. Industries, they were, it was interesting because the day that JCAR voted on this, industry officials were jumping up and down and saying, yay, this is great. As if they knew what was already in those rules. Whereas the environmental folks were saying, well, we'll have to wait and see because we don't know what's in them. So how is it that the industry knew what was in these rules when it got passed by JCAR? And the people who had worked so hard for so many years and with public comments, 30,000 public comments, as you said, knew nothing and had to wait till they got published a couple of days ago. Why is that, Josh?
It is incredibly troubling. I think all of us happened to see that first Associated Press article at the conclusion of the process and seeing voices from industry talking about how they think the final rules are excellent and how they exceeded expectations. And that was particularly troubling because I think you were exactly right. It did imply that they had more access and had seen those things. And, I think they realized that perhaps their public comments had overstepped what they should have said, and they seemed unseemly because you saw a change in the language that they used after that. And in fact, some of the stories actually had quotes changed in them. So, yeah.
Really? Stop. You say some of those stories had the quotes changed?
Yeah.
Like who? What?
There was an Associated Press story that had frustrating those concerning quotes in there about that were dialed back in subsequent versions. I talked to the reporter and she said that it was not something that they were asked to make a change or anything else. It was in the normal course of reporting. They update quotes and they extend those articles on a regular basis. And she said that it was just a function of the way those articles are normally written. But it was very troubling to see that. And I have no doubt that while the reporter didn't do anything, that the industry voices probably offered different quotes.
Yeah.
And gave them, more formal different quotes.
So what it sounds like to me is that industry got caught with its hand in the cookie jar and had to dial it back.
I don't know if we'll ever know that, but it certainly does look that way. It certainly from back channel discussions that we've had, there are other indications that perhaps there was a significant amount of input from the industry representatives long after any input had ceased to be given or accepted from the community and from environmental groups.
So ultimately, one is left with as Ann says, as you said, the rules are better than had we had no rules at all. That's damning with faint praise. You realize that, of course. It was a great process until it was no longer a great process, until it became a very bad process. There's a feeling here, and I will say, if you read Jeff Bigger's stuff and some of the other people's stuff, that the environmental community got played. They got played by JCAR. They got played by industry, certainly, because that's their whole mission in their existence. Because you got shut out at the crucial moment that this was happening. How do you respond to that?
Well, this is Illinois. And the fact of the matter is, unfortunately, we don't always have the transparency that we want and need. And that continued to be a problem here. I guess my question, though, is this process was going to move forward whether we engaged or did not engage. So the question is, do you want industry sitting at the table with somebody pushing back against them, or do you want just industry sitting at the table on their own? And that's fundamentally what it comes down to. There was not a, gee, should we put out rules or not discussion. There was the most powerful folks in the state saying, we're going to sit down, we're going to do rules. And industry was going to be at the table one way or the other. The question is, in that case, do you want for the environmental groups to be able to sit down at the table and negotiate or not? There are still a lot of very important protections and safeguards that are part of these rules. They are not what we think they should be, but there are a lot of really important things. There are enforced testing before, during, and after of water resources near the fracking sites. There is an assumed liability for frackers if water issues develop. And these are really, really important protections. There's many, many more of them, but those happen to be ones that we don't necessarily see in other states.
Do we have
done? No.
Oh, good.
There's more that needs to happen, and I think we'll have to find ways to push for that. But you said it, and that's right. That we had essentially unregulated fracking legal and had been occurring. IDNR didn't even need to ask if people were fracking. That wasn't even a part of the permit. At the time that this started, we were so far behind with rules that hadn't been updated since World War II, that you know, we're not happy with where this ended. We're frustrated with it. But I just don't see any alternative to taking part in the process and pushing very, very hard for the strictest, strongest rules that we could get, and then going back and pushing for more rather than just letting industry run roughshod and write their own rules. That just isn't an acceptable outcome. You don't make change by not taking part in the process. You can't make change by just shouting on the sidelines.
All right, and before I let you go, it's in the interest of transparency, a lot of people probably don't even know who's on the JCAR committee, the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules. Let me go through the list in case you want to pick up the phone and call your representative or senator and say, hey, what were you guys doing there? Why did you come to this conclusion or these conclusions with the fracking regulations? Co-chair Senator Don Harmon, co-chair Representative Timothy L. Schmitz, and then committee members Senator Pamela Althoff, Senator Tony Munoz, Senator Sue Rezin, she of the folks, the LaSalle Open Frack Sand Mines, Senator Dale A. Reiter, Senator Ira Silverstein, Representative Gregory Harris, Representative Louis I. Lang, Representative David L. Leach, Representative Donald L. Moffitt, and Representative Andre, and I'm going to butcher this, Thapedi. Do you know how to pronounce that, Josh, by any chance?
I don't.
It's Thapedi. Okay, so those are your folks who were on that committee. In case you've got questions, if you recognize the name and say, hey, that's my representative, hey, that's my senator, you might want to give him a call. Josh, I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy. I know you got a family, and you're a stand-up guy too. And I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to you about this and clarify a few things.
These are hugely important issues, and I'm always happy to come and talk about them. And I think there is a really important and healthy debate that we can and should have about this, both in terms of what we need to do to safeguard the public and what we need to do to make things run smoother in the state of Illinois. So I'm happy to come on anytime. Thanks, Mike.
Well, you're my go-to guy at NRDC, and I do appreciate that. So have a great Sunday. You know we'll be talking again soon.
Indeed. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number if you have any questions or comments. Now, let me change gears here, switch gears here. I don't want to give anybody whiplash, all right? But it's important that your eggs are good. When it comes to eggs, you can get them from chickens in cages or warehouses or from salad-eating poultry athletes. And it's athletes, not athletes. The folks at Locally Laid Egg Company are proud of the fact that their birds exercise and forage on pasture. Locally Laid uses non-GMO corn in its feed and plants a tree with every delivery. I've tried them. And they're great. You can get Locally Laid at Fiesta Market, Rico Fresh in Chicago, and Sunset Foods, or visit locallylaid.com. Locally Laid, because local chicks are better.
Captain's Log, Stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Killer asparagus was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work,
and so am I.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Raven Gosplach, my favorite holiday dish.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Data, options?
It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener.
I prefer my asparagus with a side of
Mr. Wolf, are you joking?
Actually, Captain, I believe he is choking.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I think it's important to know your enemy, to know who your enemy is, and know who your friends are. And I got a lot of them on Twitter. I want to thank the Seed Keeper gals. Wait, you guys get a ding. Who tweeted, Mike Novak Show, simply the best earth radio show with focus on environment and gardening. And they have the live listen link. Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, you can catch a streaming live at MikeNovak.net or ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com. Either one. And I want to remind you of, I love Ron Cowgill's hashtag for the upcoming Black Friday, which was hashtag Berry Black Friday. I think we got to start. We need to send that one out. So, and I think we've already started doing that. And let me remind you again, and I mentioned it at the top of the show, but I'm mentioning it now as again. First of all, you might want to consider
Attack of the Killer Asparagus
as a wonderful holiday gift. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. I got to subliminally or not so subliminally put that into your head. Second, the Mike Novak Referral Network, which we started last week, up and running. And people have, by the hundreds, gone to it. And I appreciate it. Click on those links there. Buy their products. They're supporting me. I want you to support them. And finally, as I mentioned at the top of the show also, we now have the donate button for the Mike Novak Show because doing radio is difficult, because doing radio is hard. And as I mentioned, no, you don't get a tax write-off for it. You just support me. No, you don't get a gift, although I suppose we could do that in the future. But for now, it's just like, do you like what you hear? Are you happy you're getting this information? Then you need to, well, you don't need to, but I hope you go there and support the Mike Novak Show. This is the final week that you, if you live in the city of Chicago, can get your yard waste recycled. I'm glad that we didn't have like 6 or 8 inches of snow. You know, we got a little dusting, so that's not a big deal. It is cold, but that doesn't mean you can't go out in your yard. And if you're one of those people, now me, you know, the way I do it is I put as much of that in my compost pile, and what doesn't go into the compost pile goes into my garden beds, some of it on the lawn, what little lawn I have. And believe me, it's tiny. But I can mow those leaves and then they just decompose over the winter and in the spring, voila, nutrients in the soil. Same thing with the garden beds. The leaves drop. And if they're in the garden bed, oh, I say, leave it. No pun intended. If the leaves are in the garden bed, I say, leave it. Thank you very much. But if you need to get rid of stuff, if this is your imperative in life, you can do it through the city of Chicago and they will compost it. At least that's what they tell us. I'm hoping there it is actually going to a composting site. We at the Chicago Recycling Coalition, of which I am the volunteer president, are tracking that down and hoping that they will indeed follow through and take this stuff to composting operations. So again, if you go to my website, mikenovak.net, you can find the link and you all you do basically is you call 311 this week through November 21st, which is Friday, I believe. Today's the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, Friday. And you call 311 and you tell them you want to have your leaves or yard waste collected. You put it in a separate bag. Now, the city doesn't care whether it's paper or whether it's film plastic. They will come by and pick it up. Now, I have heard, I have had some of my friends on the board of the Chicago Recycling Coalition say that they have had good results with that, meaning they've called 311 and in a relatively reasonable time, the city has come and picked that up, which is good. And I'm doing it this week, getting my yard waste, which means I got to get some of that, some more. I have some collected already that is too much to fit into the compost pile. And besides, I want to see this pickup in operation. As I mentioned on the program before, the city has not been really good at picking up yard waste to this point. So, A, I'm happy they're doing it now. B, I hope this continues in the spring. Once we get back to the growing season, and I hope they continue it throughout the growing season, which would be a really, really good thing. So basically, you call 311, they'll come and pick it up. And you leave it wherever next to your, don't put it in your compost or sorry, your recycling bin. You might not know this, but the number one contaminant in recycling bins is yard waste. The minute it goes into the recycling bin, that bin is considered contaminated. And a lot of people do that. So put it separately. Don't put it in your trash bin. Don't put it in your recycling bin. Leave it on the side. And a lot of people know this, and people who are out in the burbs know this, where they do this regularly. It seems simple, but education is the key to this. It's tough. I mean, as we were talking earlier to B. Johnson in the first hour, if you missed it, Zero Waste Home. And I do have to say about B. That I've seen photos of her home, and it looks like a museum. I'm never going to go that far. I'm just not. I think there's a healthy compromise to be made here. On one end of the spectrum, we have B. Johnson, who has eliminated pretty much everything in her life that has to be thrown away. On the other hand, we have the average American citizen who buys every piece of junk that he or she can get his or her hands on. That's not good either. There's got to be a compromise. There's got to be a middle along this spectrum, don't you think? Well, if you miss a conversation I had with her, I mentioned going into... Okay, it was a Starbucks. I go to Starbucks occasionally. Like the coffee, but I bring my own. Nobody else in there had one today, had their own cup, travel cup. And the irony, of course, was that Starbucks has this on the wall. They lined up along shelves and shelves of travel cups that nobody buys. And the people come in there and you can't recycle those cups. They are made. I talked to my friend, the barista, and she. I said, "You can't recycle that, right?" And she looked at it, and it says 10% post-consumer waste, post-consumer paper used in this. I said, "Well, that's in the manufacture of it, but it's coated with things that make it unable to be recycled." And yet, hundreds and thousands of people come in every day and think nothing of buying a cup and throwing it out. I don't get it. It's really easy to change that habit. It's not hard. And just having that travel cup with you, it's not hard. Having a reusable bag. I go to grocery stores. Nobody's got a reusable bag. We don't think. We don't care. It's like the world's going to heck in a handbag, and you know we're putting all this stuff into the atmosphere, and a lot of it's because so much stuff ends up in landfills, and all that off gases, the methane and the carbon dioxide and everything else, and yet we encourage the manufacture of this junk. On and on and on. All right. Well, that was, and like I said, I'm not going to go as far as B. Johnson goes. She would walk into my house and probably faint. But at least I'm trying. And that's the problem. I don't see people trying. I don't see them working as hard as they can to make a difference. Okay. I'll be all right. And the show will be over soon. And then I can yell and scream. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakening features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Yes, I understand that every life must end.
See, Helen, I had to play this because
as we sit alone, I know someday we must go.
Damon's song is Just Breathe. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to breathe here.
In and out.
That's right. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good. I wanted to call something else to folks' attention before we get out of here this morning. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I've got the information about the Friends of the Parks suing the city of Chicago to block the Lucas Museum on the lakefront. I think it's a good thing. Let's see. I had this quote from Cassandra Francis, who's the president. She says, particularly in the last month, possibly in response to the design, and also the fact that people are a little bit concerned about the fact that this was presented as a done deal, which she might have, part of that language she might have gotten off of this show last week. That has really galvanized the public's opposition to the project. I do believe that is growing. We will continue to do all we can to frame that growing voice and momentum so we continue to build support. If it becomes an election issue, so be it. And I'm telling you, you can make this one. You guys running against Rahm, this is a ready-made election issue. Pretty easy to grasp or grok. Very easy to grok. And I bet you don't even know what that means, do you, Helen? But that's, we'll have a chat about that after the show.
I think I have a vague idea.
Stranger in a Strange Land, Robert A. Heinlein. Okay. Very popular when I was in college. All right. Thanks all for listening. Out Chicago with Scott Duff is next. At this point, I say go green or
go home.
Indeed.